Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
What we did when I was Secretary of State, as I said, went above and beyond anything that was required, anything that any charitable organization has to do. Now, obviously, if I am president, there will be some unique circumstances, and that's why the foundation has laid out additional unprecedented
But didn't those unique circumstances exist when you were Secretary of State?
If I am elected.
Well, there it is. There's the opening. This is Michael Savage filling in for myself on the Savage Nation today. Although I am here, I'm really here. I'm actually here. I'm totally here. I'm back refreshed from my visit to the museum where I witnessed the William Bradford painting of a ship stuck on the ice. I go to the museum basically to see one painting because it symbolizes a lot about us as human beings. But you're not interested in art and paintings today. You're interested only in one thing, and that is who's going to be running America come November when we get rid of this goofy golfer in the White House, this abusive family. I've never seen anything like it. There's a YouTube video of them getting off a helicopter, Marine One, after their vacation amongst the billionaires and trillionaires, where he doesn't even salute the Marines standing in attention at this family as it gets off the helicopter. It's enough to make you puke. It's not only that he is a sick hater of America in his core and an abuser, but the man's style, is what's getting most of us. Okay, but we're interested in whose style is going to be predominant after the election, Hillary or him. Now, of course, today we read that a Clinton ad has come out tying Donald Trump to the Ku Klux Klan, which is intriguing in the sense that he never asked for their endorsement, but the Communist Party USA has long endorsed Hillary Clinton. I mean, the CPUSA, the Communist Party USA, tied to the worldwide communist movement, which killed over 100 million people in the last century alone. 100 million people died in the last century. Last century, 100 million people died as a result of communist philosophy. And we have a CPUSA in America that has endorsed Hillary Clinton. How come there's no sound on that? The Trump campaign should hire someone who has the brains to go find the sound of the CPUSA endorsing Hillary Clinton. But I don't know if you'll find that sound, because the communists are much smarter than you may think. They're doing very well indeed. But I'm not going to spend the whole day talking about this topic. We know the Clinton Foundation is a scam and it's a fraud. It's a fraudulent charity at every level. In fact, it should be closed down as a fraudulent charity and all the money returned. And despite her claiming that they provide direct aid to needy people around the globe, a certain individual says this: the Clinton Foundation exists as primarily a clearinghouse for other people's money, and not one dime appears to go to actual goods. And there's a blogger named Alan Smithy, a satirist, quoted on the Daily Caller, who nailed the Clinton Foundation in 35 scathing tweets. And I'm not going to read them to you. They're on michaelsavage.com. And he shows that almost all their programs are scams. Almost all of them are scams. Nothing. For example, they claim to reduce 33,500 tons of greenhouse gases in America through the HEAL program, but it gives people loans, that's all. And then there's the Clinton Health Matters Initiative. It's fundraising and grants for health initiatives. And of the $2 million raised, not one dime appears to go to actual goods, all to consultants, fundraisers, etc. So as you can see, it's a scam. And they keep 90% of the money they raise, while they claim 88% goes to charity. My friends, if you ran a charity like this, the charity would be closed down, you'd be investigated by the proper agency, and you'd probably wind up in prison. But there's a Russian saying, which I've quoted before. I'm not Russian, but I like smart sayings. And the Russian saying is, only the small criminals go to prison. The big ones lead the country. And so here's the fun part now in the Savage Nation, which is the rest of the show. We're going to talk about the Clinton Foundation donors, who include much of the conservative media. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You thought there was a conservative media. You lined up behind certain groups saying, well, they're for us. We're for them. We're on their side. They're the good guys. Wait till you hear which Clinton Foundation donors include which conservative organizations. Oh, you're going to love that one. And then I'm going to read for you Crime and No Punishment, a chapter from Scorched Earth on Hillary Clinton. Crime and No Punishment. Boy, am I a sage. I'm prescient. I mean, I wrote that. The book's out in 2 weeks, but there's a whole chapter called Crime and No Punishment. I got to read it to you. And then I'm going to read pages 114 to 117 on immigration. You know why I'm going to read to you on immigration? Because Trump is apparently changing his position on immigration, and a lot of people are getting frightened that Trump is flip-flopping so much they don't know if they're going to vote for him. But before the show even goes any further, I'm going to tell you right now, I am on record, and guys, were you able to find the sound? I'm asking Robert and Jim, Doug, did anyone find the sound of me in the past? I see a head shake, yes? Or is that a head fake? It's a head shake or a head fake? It's a head shake. Okay, we're going to play it for you later on in the show. And I will show you that I am on record saying the following, which I will say again. And I'll tell you why, because I'm a realist. I am not a member of the right-wing intelligentsia that sits in a studio in his pajamas and never goes out into the real world, or is behind locked doors on a guarded estate, never sees the real people. I'm a man in the streets. And when I go out, I'm anonymous, but I actually look at things. And I see things. And I see who is preparing my food. I see who is building the houses. And I have said what I'm going to say again on this show. You're never going to deport 30 million people. It's not 11 million. That's the figure they've used for 10 years. Why do you keep using the lie of 11 million? There's over 35 or 40 million illegal aliens in the country. Now, there are three reasons you're not going to deport 40 million people. You want me to give them to you? Would you like to see a civil war in the country? Can you imagine local police going into homes and trying to deport people? I mean, these are really tough people, number one. They're not going to go quietly into the night. They're not going to pack their valises and go back to Mexico. There's going to be war, there's going to be shooting, there's going to be bloodshed. So let's be very pragmatic about reality here. I know a lot of you say, get them out, throw them out, they're no good, they're not like us, they came here illegally. That's a nice position to take if you just want to sound like you're a tough guy in the radio or television business. But in reality, there are no tough guys when it comes to deporting 40 million people. So I'm giving you one reason, a pragmatic reason, why you're not deporting 40 million people. Now, there is a caveat to that. I would deport the one-third of federal prisoners who are here illegally. They could be deported in a very short period of time. They already are incarcerated. They are being supported at a cost of $40,000 to $60,000 a year each in our prisons. You could go into the prisons, you could deport one-third of the prisoners who are here illegally, and they're not in prison for having committed the crime of coming here illegally. They're in prison because they murdered, or they raped, or they counterfeited, or they sold drugs, or whatever they did, drunk driving. You could throw them all out of the country. Maybe it would take 6 months, but you could do it. And you could cleanse America by doing that. So let's be very clear what I just said. You can deport the prisoners who are illegal aliens. They comprise one-third or 30% of all the prisoners in our country. You cannot deport the 40 million people who are here otherwise, illegally. And I'll tell you why. I just told you why. One, because it would cause a civil war and bloodshed. Number two, your factories would stop running. Many of you don't even know that there are factories in America. We keep hearing that all the jobs and all the factories have gone to China and Mexico. Well, it's not true. Many of them have gone to China and Mexico, but not all of them. There are actual factories in the United States of America. They do a lot of things. And take a look at the production lines. Those of you sitting in your pajamas saying throw them all out. Virtually everything that you eat or drink has been touched by an illegal alien in a factory. Do you know that? Either the crop was picked by them, packaged by them, shipped by them, delivered by them. That's number two. Your entire economy would come to a screaming halt. Now you're going to say, well, Americans would do their jobs. Who? Which Americans? You? Black Lives Matter? They're going to do the jobs, and they just got $100 million, $70 million of which came from the evil man George Soros. They're going to go work all of a sudden. They have a job. Their job is agitation, attacking police, burning things, breaking things. They have a great job. Okay, so no, they're not going to do the job. Who's going to do the job? You? So I've given you two reasons why Trump's apparent flip-flop on immigration is not really a flip-flop from my point of view. It's realpolitik. Realpolitiks, it is what it is. Go into any restaurant that you enjoy, and I don't care how patriotic the owner is. Take a look at who's working in the restaurant. You want to throw him out of the restaurant too? Out of the country? Go into an Italian restaurant, see who's cooking your meal. You want to kick him out of the country too? Who's going to cook your meal for you? They're not coming here from Italy to cook your meals anymore. So the Italian owner has to hire someone who can cook the meal. Someone who we taught how to cook Italian. They're in the restaurant business. They're not going anywhere. Your economy would collapse. So that's number two. I'm giving you two reasons now why you can't deport 35 to 40 million people. One, because it would cause a civil war. They're not going to go quietly. Two, because your entire economy would come to a screaming halt. And shall I give you three? I can easily give you another reason, but I don't have to. And so I would ask you to back off on this thing about being a purist with regard to deportations, because it was never realistic to begin with. It was never a realistic plan. It was meant to incite and excite the voter. It's not happening. And I want to leave it at that. I mean, you can comment on it if you want. I'm sure many of you don't agree with me. And many of you are saying, well, Trump lost you because of the immigration flip. You're going to sit out the election because of the Trump position changes. And I disagree with you completely. And the fact of the matter is, I will take your calls on it. And I think you should comment on it. It's a big deal. Trump clarified himself on immigration. And the fact of the matter is, he had to. And he had to do it because he offended a large proportion of the electorate over the past year. I liked him, but he alienated a large proportion of the electorate over the last year. And as he comes into the final phase of the election, the centrists in the Republican Party, who are terrible people, they gave us Mitt Romney. They're now Romneyization. They're doing the Romneyization of Trump. I like that word. They're Romneyizing. They're Romneyizing Donald Trump. And I suppose that if I ever go to dinner with Donald Trump, I'll get what I got from Mitt Romney 4 years ago when I sat down with him in a restaurant in San Francisco. Believe it or not, he actually sat with me before he announced his candidacy. God, how long ago that was. It was 4 or 5 years ago. I don't know when it was. And it was a very interesting dinner. He's a very nice man. And when I brought up the issue of immigration, Mitt Romney said to me, well, that's a tough topic. I can't do anything about it because I'll lose the Hispanic vote. Now, I said to him, yeah, but you'll gain the American vote. You'll gain the vote of those who are here legally, who've worked so hard, who don't like to see all of the benefits going to so many of these families that don't do anything for this country. You may get the man working hard, but you got a wife at home with a number of children who are not working very hard. You've got kids in college in this country who think it's very unfair to give in-state tuition to non-citizens. They're really pissed off because they're working three jobs to go to college. Mitt Romney, I said that to him. It's very interesting. And I knew right then and there that Romney was going to lose because he was too centrist. He had been controlled by the RNC. The RNC is now controlling the Trump campaign, which is not even a guess. It's a given. I disclosed that on the Savage Nation the other day when we found out that Paul Manafort was fired because they hired a man named Sean Spicer, the chief strategist and communications director for the RNC. Now I ask you, did you really want a man who advised Mitch McConnell and that other guy whose name I forget with the pink tie who cried all the time, the ex-speaker of the House? I don't even remember his name. He's somewhere in Jacksonville probably kicking back and enjoying a bottle of whatever. What was his name, Robert? Who was the guy? Boehner. So the man who advised Boehner, the man who advised McConnell, is now advising Donald Trump. Just to give you some idea of where this is going to go over the next 30 days. If you're upset with Donald Trump on his modification or clarification of his immigration policies, I think you better get ready for a rough ride between now and November. I think you really better fasten your seatbelts.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. So all anyone asks me, wherever I go, if I see anyone at all, and I talk to someone, it's about, can Trump win? That's all they ask me. And I say, I don't know, I think so. But I'm very, very pessimistic about it right now, because she is so corrupt. She stinks to high heaven. She's a criminal. The foundation is a criminal front group. Everybody knows this who has a brain, but the nation is so debased intellectually and in many other ways. I would suggest that if she appeared on the last day of the campaign, God forbid, on a gurney with tubes coming out of her mouth, she would win. That's what I'm terrified by what I see going on. The people are so brainwashed. And I think that there are so many illegals in this country who will vote for her many times. I don't know how we can win this election. And I say we because I want Trump to win. Don't misinterpret anything I say today. When you consider, for example, that the level of nepotism that has gone on under the Clintons and the Clinton Foundation exceeds that of the era of Napoleon III in France, you'll realize that in other sane times, whole governments have fallen from this level of corruption. Now, it's lucky that I'm a widely read man with a scholarly background, because very few in the media have ever referred to the word, to Napoleon III when discussing the Clinton Foundation, but it is... There is a great article here for someone who's an intellectual genius who writes for a wise publication, who is not simply an oral individual, as I am, largely an oral person, except for my books. But let's say you're a writer. I want you to look into Napoleon III and nepotism and see how it relates to Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton's foundation. The term comes from the Italian word nepotismo, which means nephew, from the Latin root nepos. And I will tell you what that has to do with Bill and Hillary Clinton's corrupt foundation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Everybody agrees we get the bad ones out. But when I go through and I meet thousands and thousands of people on this subject, and I've had very strong people come up to me, really great, great people come up to me, and they've said, Mr. Trump, I love you. But to take a person that's been here for 15 or 20 years and throw them and the family out, it's so tough, Mr. Trump. I mean, I have it all the time. It's a very, very hard thing.
All right, so that's what we're talking about. And I've given you my three reasons why you can't deport 30 million people. And I know we're going to get the hardcore who are going to say, no, throw them all out, which you'll hear from in a minute. They're lining up. They're angry. They're going to accuse me next of being Karl Marx or Vladimir Lenin. God knows what they're going to accuse me of, because I'm a realist. And I actually live in the real world, as opposed to just sitting here in a pair of pajamas, broadcasting, you know, PJ Media kind of thing. It's easy to come up with ideas when you're sitting in your house and never leave, and you don't see the real world. Go to a factory somewhere in Tennessee and see who's on the production line, for example. I'm picking Tennessee out of the air. Go look at a factory in the southeast, where there are still many factories, okay? There aren't many factories in New York City, so you can't draw your conclusions from there unless you go around Manhattan and ask yourself, who's cooking the meals? You're gonna suddenly cook the meals? Now, that's a very big topic, and we're going to talk about it. WABC Joe, you're the first up. What's on your mind?
Mike, if your figure is accurate, 35 million people, and if you put at the top of that list foreign operatives and the emerging fifth column, which you've discussed in this country, that's been going on for a long time, deporting them first, I say go for it. We should at least try to get them out. What would it hurt?
Wait, let's start again. Get who out? I don't know. Where would you start? Who would you deport first?
Foreign operatives. We know who they are. They're here. They're working in our government.
How many are there? How many foreign operatives are in America?
How could we even know? They're not going to tell us, but it's got to be up.
Well, but if you don't know, who does know? Who are they? Who are the foreign operatives? And okay, define foreign operative for us. What is a foreign operative?
Anybody out? Anybody not from the United States working here to bring down our way of life from another country?
Well, that would be the entire Democrat Party. I mean, at the top of the list would be George Soros. You think you're going to be able to strip him of his citizenship because of what he's doing to this country, including giving $70 million to the thugs in Black Lives Matter, especially when Black Lives Matter is part and parcel of the thug machine of the Democrat Party? They're using them to frighten the middle class. I don't think it's realistic, Joe. I hope you're not going to hate me because I said you can't deport them. Are you going to stop listening to me?
Yes.
You are going to never listen to me again because of that?
No, I didn't say that. No, I says, I'll tell you why it is realistic to attempt to deport the 35 million. We may never actually reach that number, but if you put at the top of the list foreign operatives and the emerging fifth column, which you've discussed on this program...
I know, but what are you... Again, what's a far... Who's a foreign operative? I don't know who they are. Who are foreign operatives?
We're really going to have to dig deep, and we're going to have to go into these people's backgrounds, and we're going to have
Who's we? Who's going to dig? Which branch of the government is going to dig?
Well, that's my next point, which is at some point in time, we're going to have to harden this. We have to prepare this country for the worst.
How would you... Wait, well, Joe, you live in New York City or wherever you're listening to me in New York. Would your life improve if these illegals were taken out of the country? How would your life benefit?
Michael, if they are here to undermine our way of life, bring...
No, I didn't talk about those who were committing sedition or treason. I'm talking about the guy working in a restaurant in Manhattan. How are you going to benefit if he's thrown out of the country?
Not at all. I'm working side by side with these guys. They're good workers. They're good contractors. I work with my hands too. That's not what I'm worried about.
Well, hold on. Wait a minute. So this is good. Are you a worker? What do you do?
I do construction, Mike, up here in New York.
All right, fine. So you know that a good proportion of the men on the jobs are not citizens, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Who would take their jobs if they were deported?
Oh, I would be busy every day, I'll tell you that. I'd be making over $1,000 a week. But, there would be...
Are you saying that in the construction trades, there are enough American workers who would fill those jobs?
There's enough American males out there. If they're willing to if they want to learn the trades, go out...
Ah, look what you just said. Look what you just said, if. They're not like you, Joe. You come from a family who built in you the work ethic. You're proud of the fact that you're a laborer. Are you a carpenter, an electrician? What do you do?
I do it all, jack of all.
But how many Americans do you think are going to be able to do that kind of work? Do you think they really would do it? It's backbreaking work. I've worked construction as a kid, getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning and carrying lumber until you build up, what do you call that on your shoulders to, what do you call them when they build up like a board? What do you call that when you build up on your shoulder when you carry lumber until you don't feel the pain anymore? Do you remember the early days when you were carrying lumber?
Well, I tell you, in the early days, I was in the utility industry. But I ended up leaving.
All right, Joe, look, I don't agree with you at all. I think that Trump is being a realist about this. By the way, let me say this, having said that, I don't think he's going to gain 1% of the Hispanic vote, no matter what his position is. How do you like that? The positions he took in the beginning of building the wall and saying the truth that a lot of drugs and criminals come across the border is 100% true. But they turned that into something that it isn't. And Hillary has such a great smear machine under this cretin who works for her, this Blumenthal. He is such an evil Stalinist. This gentleman, Beria, who worked for the Soviets in the NKD, would have looked like a piker compared to what Blumenthal will do if he becomes chief of staff to Hillary Clinton. We will have barriers running around this country purging America of all patriots. So don't think I don't see the handwriting on the wall of this evil empire. I'm sending you my new bestseller, Scorched Earth, Joe. I disagree with you, though. I don't have to agree with every caller. I guess nobody agrees with me. You want them all thrown out. We had Joe on WABC. KSFO. We'll go across the country now to my home city. Marvin is a deporter. Marvin, go ahead, please. You have the floor on the Savage Nation.
Well, Michael, thanks for taking my call. I think it's a lot easier to accomplish the repatriation than what you believe. You cannot have open borders and a safety net and Social Security, because it's going to surpass what the incomes are in all these other countries. They can't be coming here to work because there are no jobs for them. Those jobs are already taken. You can't go into, as you pointed out, you can't go into any industry and find the entry-level jobs available. There aren't any. They are now...
Well, hold on. We agree 100%, but we're not talking about stopping a flow of future immigrants. We're talking about deporting 30 million who are already here, aren't we?
Well, okay, for the ones that are already here, number one, you start by cutting off all the benefits, okay?
We agree. Hold it. Let's check that together. Yes, I agree. Agreed.
Number two, you enforce no employment for people who are not citizens, okay?
All right, let's check that. Agreed.
Do those two things, then each person in the entire family gets the annual income from the country they're from to go back. And that means if their annual income in Ecuador, for instance, which is $3,600, and there's five people in that family, they get five times that annual income to go back. Now, if they can't get a job and they don't get benefits, they're going to take that offer. So over time, over probably a year, 2 years, 3 years, they would enlarge.
But you're making an assumption that I believe is faulty, because you know the country will never take them back. The country won't even let them in.
Well, then the other aid we give to that country stops. One way or another, they're going to look.
Well, I think you ought to apply for the position of the head of the INS under Donald Trump. What actual profession are you in?
I'm a planner, a consultant for.
All right. So you. But look, having said what you just said, which is 100% brilliant and true and accurate, I am talking about realpolitik. Can you deport 30 million people? You know the answer is no. But what you're saying is by cutting off the sugar, the ants will leave the nest, right?
Well, you don't have to do an alien Gonzalez. I'm saying that over time, and it takes time.
I'm glad you said that. Do you remember what it took to deport, to get one kid out of here under Bill Clinton?
Well, no.
And send them back to that hellhole in Cuba?
Benefits, and you close off employment. They will take the offer of the annual income for each person in the family to go back to their home country. They will fly back like a tourist does. The second thing is, the ones that are working here, you're worried about emptying the factories. The ones that are working here, there's nothing wrong with that. But what is the concern we have about all these people coming here? Is they're all going to come here and they're going to need Social Security. So what we do is we sell these jobs to these people. The person who has the job can stay, but he's got to go back at age 55. And no chain migration. They can't.
He's never going to go back at 55. But if you cut off welfare, and I mean cut it off, food stamps, and all federal, state, and local benefits, housing, etc., then you're suddenly cutting off the magnet that brings them here. Of course they all want to come here, just as the Africans want to go to England, just as the Syrians want to get into England, because they know there's a welfare state waiting for them, so they can sit around and do nothing except curse the nation and plot a next suicide attack. The same thing has to be done here. I agree with you. Cut off the benefits, and then you're going to cut off the electricity of the magnet that draws them here. But we're talking really about Donald Trump's flip-flopping on immigration. Do you feel that that's doomed his campaign?
Do I think it doomed? No, because, you see, what people are missing is, did Barack Obama tell us everything he was going to do before he got elected? No. You have to get elected, and then you can impose a policy, or you can change immigration, you know, the way it's conducted and all that kind of stuff. You can do that. Donald Trump is doing the smartest thing, because what he's doing is he's now taking a lot of things away from his critics. He's saying, okay, the ones that are the criminals and the people that everybody knows nobody wants here, like Obama's, imported 6,000 MS-13 people here? So those people go back, and when they're caught, like these sanctuary cities people, when you catch the guy, he gets deported. 30% of our prison system here in California is illegal aliens. Okay, there's no reason. Now, when you say, well, the countries won't take them, they get so much money from us, it'll be worth it for them to take these people back when we give them an annual income to start. But the bottom line is that they have been brought here for only one reason, and it certainly isn't to work. They've been brought here to vote. And who screwed up the country they have been from? They did. So unless we do this, unless we take away the right of these people to vote, and I'm serious, illegal aliens, as you've pointed out...
Yeah, but every time a state imposes voter registration laws, the illegitimate, anti-American Democrat Party screams racism and tries to upset any state that enforces a voter ID law. How can you defeat a machine that is as corrupt as the Democrat Party, that it goes beyond Napoleon's nepotism? You're a very bright guy, Marvin. I appreciate it. You're a planner. That's interesting. I'm going to send you a copy of Scorched Earth, and I want to read something from Scorched Earth. It's on immigration. I'm going to do it right now, Robert. I have a minute or two of the floor of my own show. This is on page 114. I did not write an entire chapter on immigration because immigration seeps throughout the entire book, through all the chapters. I'm going to give you a sample for free, and it's about immigration. And I say, how many refugees can we take in, especially those who will never, ever assimilate into this nation? Not in 1,000 years will they assimilate. It's not in their culture to assimilate. That's the way they work. And then I say, this is a tough issue for all of us because we have all been the children of immigrants at a certain point. Everyone in America is an immigrant, including the Native Americans. Yes, they had been here before the so-called white man arrived, and they had been here for a long time. I studied this as a young anthropologist and came to understand the time frame of the Native American peoples, how long they had been here before the colonists arrived from Europe. If you study more deeply and go past the surface in anthropology, you will learn that there are traces of people who were here before the Native Americans. There are skeletons of Caucasian-looking people who were here before the Native Americans. They were thrown out by the Smithsonian Institution because the fact of their existence embarrassed certain individuals. Thrown out faster than that same museum wanted to toss the Enola Gay, the plane that dropped the first atomic bomb because it might offend the Japanese. You remember the nation that started the damn war in the Pacific? Like the army ants I mentioned, the history of life on Earth is about invasion. And human beings are no exception. We're being invaded right now. We're being invaded from the south. We're being invaded from the north, from the east, and from the west. You might say, well, that's the way of things, and you might get used to it. They're here, they're near, they're everywhere. The question is, why are liberals so quick to embrace this invasion? And why are traditionalists and conservatives like myself so resistant to erasing the borders, language, and culture of this great nation? I'm going to continue with the following line. As an immigrant son, I think about the refugee crisis every day. As an immigrant son, I have to ask myself, why do I oppose relocating 10,000 or 100,000 Syrian refugees into this nation? All from Scorched Earth, a must-have book on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
This is the Savage Nation. Later on, I'm going to read to you what is a 21st century conservative, because there are people who think that they own the word conservative, and they don't know that there are many different interpretations of the definition of what is a conservative. And I'm going to show you that we have to stop talking about the beloved war horses such as Edmund Burke and William F. Buckley Jr. They were conservatives in their time. The world has changed. And the definition of what a conservative is has changed as well. With the emergence of ISIS, we have to redefine our terms to include challenges they never dreamed of. That's on page 167 of my opus, Scorched Earth. Believe me, it's my best book. It's got the best philosophy, and it is very clear. But I want to focus in the next hour on immigration, because as an immigrant son, and I am the only talk radio host in the United States of America in the top tier who is an actual immigrant son. I know more about the subject than anyone, emotionally, intellectually, physically, and every other way. I have one foot in the old world and one foot in the new world. And yet I oppose relocating 100,000 Syrian refugees for very specific reasons. But we are talking not about the Syrian refugees. We are talking about Donald Trump's position that has changed and how it affects his election and his chances of election, aren't we?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE.
Savage.
Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
The reason a lot of Klan members like Donald Trump is because a lot of what he believes, we believe in. Donald Trump would be best for the job.
For president.
Yeah.
I am a farmer and white nationalist. Support Donald Trump.
Sending out all the illegals, building a wall, and a moratorium on Islamic immigration. That's very appealing to a lot of ordinary white people.
Running against Donald Trump at this point is really treason to your heritage.
Will you unequivocally condemn David Duke and say that you don't want his vote or that of other white supremacists?
I don't know anything about white supremacists, so I don't know.
Trump named Steve Bannon as his new campaign CEO. Mr. Bannon is best known for his controversial Breitbart News campaign chair that ran a website that has become a field day for the alt-right, which is racist, and all sorts of other ists.
The alt-right, which is a sort of dressed-up-in-suits version of the neo-Nazi and white supremacist movements.
A lot of what he believes, we believe in.
All right, so Hillary does what she does best, which is smear under the Beria of our time, Blumenthal. Blumenthal and Beria would be blood brothers, and Blumenthal could have easily worked for Joseph Stalin as the head of his secret police, as far as I'm concerned. And they're trying to tie Trump to the KKK white supremacists. But, you know, there are human beings in Klan robes, and there are human beings called white supremacists, just as there are human beings called members of La Raza. La Raza is a brown supremacist movement by definition. Black Lives Matter is a racist organization by its definition, in that they only think one type of race matters. So in a sense, if Black Lives Matter supports Hillary Clinton, etc., you know, this is the country we live in. There are extremes on both sides. And, of course, trying to tie Trump to the KKK white supremacists is so childish. Who will it convince? Rachel Maddow? It's going to convince Anderson Cooper? You think these people already don't believe that? I mean, these people are mentally deranged to begin with, which is why they have jobs in the television media. Anyone who would get up every day thinking that putting on pancake makeup and putting on clothing and lying to the American people is a decent way to spend your life as a human being, by definition, I think that they need a psychiatrist, or both a psychiatrist and Thorazine. So here we are talking about the campaign, because that's all there is to talk about. It's all anyone's going to talk about between now and November. And I'm talking about it for a long time. And the big story is, of course, that what you don't know is that the Communist Party USA supports Hillary Clinton. How come there's no sound of this communist in America supporting Hillary Clinton? How come someone doesn't go around with a camera getting some of the burners, killers, and murderers in the streets of America supported by George Soros supporting Hillary Clinton? They're the equivalent of the Klan, aren't they? But they're much worse than the Klan. The last I checked, the last people who were killed by the Klan was like 50 years ago, while people on the other side are killing today with their little games in the streets with bats and sticks and knives and punching old people in the head. So you want to start smearing, the smear can run in both directions. I think we have to now not worry about this despicable, corrupt creature playing the Klan card on Donald Trump. I think we need to talk about Donald Trump. I think we need to talk about his change on the immigration issue and the other topics that I pulled together for you today, including the Clinton Foundation donors, which include, or who include, dozens of media organizations and individuals. I was shocked, I tell you, shocked, when I read that between $1 million and $5 million was given by James Murdoch, the CEO of 21st Century Fox. I was stunned to read that Newsmax Media, a Florida-based conservative media network, gave Hillary Clinton $1 to $5 million. I was not surprised to read that Carlos Slim, the chairman and CEO of Telmex, is the largest New York Times shareholder. I knew that. I was surprised not to read that Google and News Corporation founder, News Corporation Foundation, and a philanthropic arm of Fox News and Google gave her between $500,000 and $1 million. I was a little surprised to see that Houghton Mifflin gave $250,000 to $500,000 to Clinton. I was a little surprised to see that crossover. I was not surprised to see that the Richard Mellon Scafee Foundation, I think he passed away, the owner of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, gave between $250,000 and $500,000. I was, well, I think the others I'm not surprised by. George Stepp on All of Us, that slime ball, gave her between $50,000 and $100,000. He's filthy from the get-go. What, are you surprised by him? The man, the minute the man speaks, you know he has no credibility. He just makes your flesh crawl. Maude Zuckerman, owner of the New York Daily News and U.S. News Report, I thought he was dead. They said he gave between $50,000 and $100,000. I think he's still on a respirator somewhere. AOL and HBO, Hollywood Foreign Press Association, presenter of the so-called Golden Globe Awards, Viacom, gave her $25,000 to $50,000. I shouldn't say gave her. I mean to the foundation, the esteemed foundation. Public Radio International gave the foundation $10,000 to $25,000. If Trump wins, he closes down NPR. He makes them return their money that they've mulked for the public. Turner Broadcasting, parent company of the Crescent News Network, $10,000 to $25,000. Twitter, $10,000 to $25,000. Comcast, NBC Universal, public broadcasting service, gave between $5,000 and $10,000. Robert Albritton, owner of Politico, I told you was a wholly owned subsidiary of the Clinton family, gave $1,000 to $5,000. Then there's AOL, Huffington Post, Hearst Corporation, Judy Woodruff. Ha, Judy Woodruff. She never had credibility to begin with. Washington Post gave between $250,000 and $1,000. All right, that's chicken feed, nothing. But these donors are important, especially if you go to the $1 to $5 million level, and you read that Thomson Reuters, Newsmax, and Murdoch gave between $1 and $5 million, you have to say, uh-oh, have I been had? So those are interesting facts that just came out the other day. And the foundation is so rotten that there have been 11 calls to shut down the Clinton Foundation from left-wing media sources. That's interesting. It came up on Breitbart by Jerome Hudson. These organizations demanded that the Clintons shutter the foundation. The Huffington Post, the Washington Post, USA Today, the New Yorker, the Boston Globe, Slate, the Daily Beast, Huffington Post, senior editor Sam Stein, the Huffington Post bureau chief Ryan Grimm, longtime Clinton ally and former PA Governor Ed Rendell, New York Magazine columnist Jonathan Chait. These are all left-wingers, and even they said, shut it down, shut it down, shut it down. So is it going to affect her chances? I don't know. I know that if she were comatose, God forbid, on a gurney, and had tubes coming out of her mouth, they'd vote for her. So what can I say to you? What can I tell you? The country is what it is. It's polarized. It's a game right now that is a tough one to predict. I hope he can still win. But we're talking about Donald Trump as well, because he has apparently flip-flopped on immigration, and it's gotten diehards like you. Many of you are very angry that he flip-flopped. You want all of the illegals deported. And I have given you a very careful, reasoned statement in the first hour as to why I oppose that. And I oppose it for pragmatic reasons, because you're being unrealistic. It's very easy to be a caller to a radio show and say, throw them all out. It's very easy to act like a radio tough guy and wear a bomber jacket and get up and shoot your mouth off and say, I throw them all out. I get rid of them all. Easy to sound like a tough guy on the radio. But the reality is it doesn't work in real life. Ask any tough guy if they actually talk like that in real life. They don't. Nobody talks like that in real life. Go into a factory and see who is running the production lines, who's working on the production lines, and go stand up there on your high horse and scream, throw them all out. Get them out of the country. Now, who's going to do their job? You? You're going to suddenly do the job. So I understand there's a problem. And what I said was, let's be realistic about it. You're not deporting 30 million people. I said, you want to start deportation proceedings? Start with the one-third of prisoners who are illegal aliens. They've committed felonies, multiple felonies. You could deport them. They're already incarcerated. They can be deported very easily. That would cut down the cost of incarceration enormously and open up the prisons for the Americans who belong in there. like those who are being funded by George Soros for causing mayhem and committing crimes. So you could start with those who actually are prisoners, who are illegal aliens. We shouldn't be supporting them. We should be deporting them. I like that rhyme. Don't support, deport. Don't support, deport. Don't support, deport. So the next time you go to a Trump rally, maybe get a sign, don't support, deport. And hold up a copy of, I really want to, once the book comes out, I'm going to demand that my listeners take Scorched Earth to the rallies and hold them up. So that Donald does a shout out. And he sees Scorched Earth and he starts talking about the policies of Barack Obama and the policies of Hillary Clinton, which are Scorched Earth policies. And what do I mean by that? They're practicing Scorched Earth policies towards all of our beloved institutions. That's exactly what I mean. It's a very important concept, and it's a tough issue, this issue of deportation. And I want to pick up where I left off in the last hour on page 115 of Scorched Earth, which can only be ordered online right now from Amazon. And here we go. As an immigrant son, I think about the refugee crisis every day. As an immigrant son, I have to ask myself, why do I oppose relocating 100,000 Syrian refugees into this nation? The embarrassing point is that people will always compare the situation to the Jews and the Holocaust. That is the underlying motif of the entire liberal establishment. The emotional substratum of this entire argument is based upon the Jews and Nazi Germany, and it's a false argument. It's a false one on many levels. I'm sure you can figure out why it's false and why the narrative is being used by those who want to flood the United States with refugees for their own reasons. Lutheran Family Services is accepting refugees only for the money. It's on board with Turban Durban, demanding 100,000 refugees because they make money off of them. They're doing it because they're greedy. They're doing it because they make money off of it. There's a lot of self-interest. There's a lot of greed. And the comparison to the Jews fleeing Germany during the Holocaust is an unsound analogy for many reasons. It's not Jews running from the gas chambers. This is Muslims running toward financial gain at your expense. The fact of the matter is, this is now page 116, Scorched Earth. The fact of the matter is that wherever they go, Sweden, Norway, Denmark, Germany, they abuse the social service welfare systems. How can we take care of refugees when we have so many immigrants, indigenous poor already? Is everybody here rich? All of a sudden the country is rolling in money? All of a sudden Obama has cleared everything up and there are no poor in this nation who need the help of the government? There's something wrong with this picture. For many years I have preached that ultra-tolerance is killing us. And now we have a brainwashed generation of children raised on Adderall, marijuana, other toxic compounds, with skimpy vegan and other inadequate diets, and outright brainwashing in the government schools where they fully believe things that are false as though they are truths. They have no religion but liberalism. They have been taught to live by the Ten Commandments of liberalism. One, man is evil and poisoning the earth. The earth is a living organism and needs to be protected. All white people are racist. All people of color are good. All refugees should be allowed in and given whatever they request. If people make too much money, it should be taken from them. Government handouts have no price tag. Nature should be protected at all costs unless you don't like your gender. Burning the American flag is protected speech. All players on the international stage have equal credibility. Those are the Ten Commandments of liberalism. You've seen it nowhere but here. And so our brainwashed drug youth cast their brainwashed drug youth votes. We have immigrants who want things for free, who are being legitimized in an illegitimate way. Jerry Brown, for example, with his criminal ways, has allowed the Department of Motor Vehicles in California to automatically register illegal aliens so they guarantee not a one-party system, which is what we already have, but a no-party system, just an autocratic system. No party necessary, just an autocrat in Sacramento, an autocrat in Washington. This is the dissolution of democracy itself under the guise of diversity. Diversity is destroying democracy. Now, if you can find better writing in the political sphere, I suggest you go buy it, because you're not going to find better writing on this subject of immigration. And then I'm going to tell you this. Well, I'm going to tell you more as I go on. I can't do this all in one day. I have to talk more and more about all of this, how to solve the problem, what I would do if I had the power, what I would do if I could influence Donald Trump to root out all of the subversives in America, and how to get rid of all of the left-wing activists. And I talk about reestablishing something along the lines of the House Un-American Activities Committee, UAC. like they had in the 1950s. It's a very important subchapter in Scorched Earth that no one else would dare to write, because it's long overdue that we rid this nation of the scourge of progs who want to destroy the very foundations of this nation. Okay, if you care to comment on this issue of immigration and Donald Trump's emerging or new position, go ahead, make my day.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
So we have the most corrupt candidate in American history running for the presidency. She's so corrupt that even the left wing is appalled by it. They still vote for her. I said that to you. If she were behind bars, God forbid on a gurney with tubes coming out of her mouth, they'd vote for her, because they're that committed to their cause of destroying everything that we find, that we hold dear. That's the absolute truth. And I'm getting a lot of emails from people saying, Savage, reread the Ten Commandments of Liberalism that the children have been brainwashed and drugged into believing, which will explain the dumb millennial vote. Man is evil and poisoning the earth. This is what they've learned in college. This is what they teach them at Harvard. The earth is a living organism and needs to be protected. All white people are racist. All people of color are good. All refugees should be allowed in and given whatever they request. Your daughter is being told if people make too much money, it should be taken from them. Your son is being taught government handouts have no price tag and no limitations. Your daughter is being taught nature should be protected at all costs, unless you don't like your gender. Your son is being taught burning the American flag is protected speech. Your daughter is being taught all players on the international stage have equal credibility. And that is why our brainwashed, drugged youth cast their brainwashed drug youth vote. And that's on page 117 of the most important book of our time, Scorched Earth. I'll read more from the book as the book gets closer to publication. You're going to hear much more about it. The people who know my writings, who have read it, say it's my best book, a most important book. And I'm not worried about whether it sells. It will sell. It's like a bar in San Francisco. When I first moved here, I was told that there's a saying here in San Francisco, if you open a new bar, it's not about whether it will make money, it's a matter of how much money it will make. I'm not worried as to whether it will be a bestseller. It will be a bestseller. I'm worried about how many people will read the book in time for the election to understand the danger we are in and possibly shift their vote to the sane side of things. This is the Savage Nation. Be here.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
All right, so we're talking about Donald Trump's position on immigration. I've taken the position that is not new. Did we find that tape, guys? In the past, I have said what I'm about to say again and again and again. You're not deporting 40 million people. Go into a real factory and see who's running the production lines. See who's packing the ice cream in the ice cream plant. Take a look at what's actually going on in America. Now, does that mean I want unlimited numbers of immigrants? Absolutely not. Does that mean that I want unlimited amounts of benefits? Absolutely not. Cut them off. I don't want the wife sitting at home knocking out babies, collecting welfare and food stamps. You cut off the benefits, and many of them will have to leave the country. Now, who's going to do the job is another story. I don't know who's going to do the job. I don't know who, what? People on welfare are suddenly going to wake up in the morning and want to go to work at 5 o'clock in the morning? Go look at Baltimore. They're going to go to work and work in the factories? You must be joking. They're going to go to work in factories all of a sudden. All right, so there's those issues. Then there's the issue of race. There's the issue of identity. There's the issue of the attack upon the white male in this country. These are all very important issues that need to be discussed, because none of these statements should be taboo, nor should there be a fear to discuss the issue of the unassailed attacks upon white people in this country by the left. You know, Eric Holder, one of the most dishonest attorney generals who started the war on police, which has resulted in the death of many police, has said he wants an honest dialogue on race. I'd like an honest dialogue on race, but I don't believe such calls are very sincere from men like Eric Holder. They don't want an honest dialogue on race. They want an outright Well, okay, I'm going to pause right there. I don't have to now go over the line to make my point. There is a United States of America. It has a distinct set of borders. It has a distinct language called English. It has a distinct culture. It has a distinct heritage that derives from the European founders. It is not just an open cesspool that should drag in the worst of the world. You mean anyone who comes across the border is suddenly a wonderful citizen who is looked upon with more favor by Jerry Brown than you are? That's the country you want to live in? You know, I was reading dialogues on the issue of Syrian refugees and Muslim refugees and African refugees into Europe. And I was interested in seeing how the brainwashed youth see this issue. So I saw one young person, I think it was a woman from Holland, who was obviously raised in a very nice liberal family. It didn't mean they were stupid. They were just very, very, I don't know the right word. They were Dutch through and through, but they were, you know, nice people. And they argue that where are these people going to go if we don't take some of them in? They can't live anywhere else, they say, so we have to take them in. We have to be kind to them. So if you go on and you start debating with them and you say, but wait a minute, how many do you want to take in? You know, I met a German couple about a month ago, 2 months ago outside a ferry building. Young German couple had a couple of beautiful children, stunningly beautiful children, 3, 4 years old. And I looked at the little girl's eyes, the blue eyes of the Northlands. I looked at the parents, pure Germans. I didn't know where they stood in anything. I just assumed they were young and said they were liberal, which they were, by the way. And I looked at them and we chatted waiting for a ferry. And I just said, they didn't know who I was, obviously. I said, do you think your daughter will have a future in Germany? I didn't say it in any provocative manner. You know what they said? They said, we hope so. That's the liberal viewpoint. This is how they see it. It's not that they're stupid. It's not that they're naive. It's not that they hate their country. They're good, decent human beings who don't understand that by bending over backwards for these refugees, they're basically digging the grave of their own nation and the future for their children. And this is the problem. They don't quite understand it. And the more you yell, the more you look like a nut who they're not going to listen to. And it's going to take a lot of work to educate them as to their own suicidal behavior in that regard. They may be nice people, but they're digging their own grave. They don't understand that. So look, I have supported Borders, Language, and Culture from the day I began in radio in 1992. That's my middle name, Borders, Language, and Culture, Savage Nation. That's what it is. I came up with that back in 92 when I first started in radio because I was challenged. Never forget how I started in radio. It's very important for you to hear this. I began in liberal San Francisco. I was no one ever heard anyone like me before. I started at night on a fill-in show on KGO Radio, and people were saying, I can't believe I'm listening to this guy. It's like I'm hearing myself think. They were the 30% of the people who live in the Bay Area who I've never heard from. The non-existent in the San Francisco Bay Area, the people who are spit upon by the psychotics who run the newspapers, spit upon by the liars in the media, many of whom are actually agreeing with them but pretend that they're not in order to keep their jobs. 30-35% of the population don't exist, they're non-citizens. So they heard me, they said, oh my God, this guy speaks for us. And I established myself on this one local station. Okay, so now it's many years later, here I am. And I would say now I'm in the twilight of my career. I say that meaningfully. I don't say that in any negative way. I mean, I just re-signed the contract with my syndicator, Westwood One. It's a wonderful contract. I'm very happy with it. I feel good about it. But I'm not a fool. I look at an hourglass. I know what it means when you see sand in an hourglass. How many years do you think I'm going to do this? 100 years? I'm going to do it for 50 years? No, it's not. So there's a finite time frame for everything on earth. Everything on earth has its time and its place. Do I have to sing to you from the Old Testament? To everything there is a time and a place? So, as I say to you, whatever the number of years that are left that I want to do radio or can do radio, I will do it. But ultimately, it's the man upstairs who decides, not me. I've seen that too many times in my life to believe that I have absolute control over my own destiny. I don't believe it for one second. There were too many steps along the way where it all could have evaporated and blown up. It should have, right in front of my eyes. Things were done to me that you would never believe in my career from the day I started that should have derailed the show from the beginning, but it didn't happen. So I have to say that there's some kind of destiny or fate involved as well. Now, having said that, I'm trying to say something else in the bigger picture as we move into this election, which really is, and we've heard it before, the most important election in our life. Because not only is she a Prague, but she's a corrupt Prague. It would be bad enough if she were an honest Prague, but she isn't. She is a total criminal Prague in the minds of anyone who looks at this woman. How you can elect a criminal to the highest office in the land is beyond me. How anyone who holds themselves up as a progressive liberal, it's astonishing to me. The level of hypocrisy and stupidity to say that because she's a progressive, I'll elect a criminal. So you say, well, okay, but I don't like him, they'll say. He's worse than her. What has he done that's worse than her? Here's the thing that I don't understand. What has he actually done that's worse than her? Explain to me something he has done that's worse than abandoning people in Benghazi and having wonderful Americans killed because she pulled troops out. And by the way, in my last book, I pointed out the names of the generals she fired who were ready to launch aircraft to save the individuals in Benghazi. But she wanted them dead. Mort, gone, finished, kaput. She didn't want exposed what the ambassador was actually doing. That's what you want in the office of the presidency? Someone as bad as this? You want somebody who has come up with a policy that is so flawed that has almost destroyed the entire world called the Arab Spring? This is what you want in the White House? Put aside the criminality. So tell me what Donald Trump has done that has resulted in the deaths of individuals. Tell me what Donald Trump has done that has resulted in the migration of millions of people into Europe, destroying the destiny of the nations. There is no answer to that question. He's not done anything. It's all a smear campaign. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? So that's why you say, well, I wouldn't vote for him. Why? Because you've been brainwashed into thinking he's so bad? Was he so bad? Was he done? Oh, he's a narcissist. He only thinks about himself. Oh, I see. You mean Obama's not a narcissist who thinks only about himself? Every politician is a narcissist by definition. Who else would go into that business? Would anyone who go into the politics is really not a narcissist? So it doesn't mean anything. The same is true in entertainment. Same is true in my field. Everyone in this field is a narcissist, myself included. We all have character flaws. That's what makes us good at what we do. So that's irrelevant whether a person is defined as a narcissist. That unto itself means nothing. So what I'm saying is, what has he actually done that's so evil? And I have to look at the list. I don't know what the list is. I have no idea. Here, Michael Savage newsletter, which I really want you to start getting. It's free on michaelsavage.com. And I'm going to read it to you. It's really good. I did it the day before I took off and hung out in the museum for the day. So I did. That's what I do. My life very simple. I went to the DeYoung Museum in San Francisco. And I walked right into the same gallery I go to every time to see one particular painting called William Bradford's Arctic Scene. It's about a ship locked in the ice. I wrote about it in one of my novels, I think, Abuse of Power. I actually refer to the painting. I make believe my character Jack goes there. Well, a little bit of auto, but I look at this painting of a ship locked in the ice by William Bradford, 1880. And I ask myself, why am I drawn to this painting? What is it about a sailing ship that was locked in the ice in 1880 that so pulls me into it? Why? And I looked at the painting yesterday in the gallery and I thought about why, because it symbolizes the dilemma of being a human being. We are all trapped in a certain way. We're all locked in the ice in a certain way. We're trapped in our bodies. We're trapped inside of our bodies. We're the only member of the animal kingdom, by definition, a member of the animal kingdom, that is trapped inside a body that is like of a monkey. Human beings, with the aspirations of human beings, with the mind of human beings that could go anywhere, trapped in a monkey's body. The naked ape. That's what we really are. So I look at the ship trapped on the ice, and I say it poses a dilemma. It poses a dilemma that we all have, trapped on the ice. And so what are the alternatives of the sailors on that ship? They have to make a calculation, as you do every day. Here's the calculation. They're trapped on the ice, and they have provisions in the ship. So they have a couple of choices. They could wait for the spring thaw, but they don't know if they have enough provisions until the spring thaw when they can get their way out of that ice pack, right? or they can make a run for it by taking whatever they can get and getting the sled dogs and going over the ice and hoping to God they're going to find a station where they can meet another whaler that'll take them out. And then they make the choice. Do they stay and wait for the thaw, or do they abandon ship and basically run for freedom? In many ways, we face this every day in our own lives, in many different ways, at least in my mind. And so it comes down to the election. What does this election really mean to us? What does it symbolize? With her a corrupt gangster criminal family, we say, I can't believe that this woman could wind up running the most powerful nation on earth. If she's raping the treasury now, if she's pillaging the earth because of her sick greed, that to which there is no limit, there is no limit to how much money they're raking in. What are they doing with the money? There's a psychological flaw in her mind and his mind. What are they doing with all of this money? What do they need more money for? What the heck is Hillary and Bill? What are they up to? What motivates them? What drives them to take money from the worst people on the planet and stick it into a foundation? What are they personally gaining from that? It's not the money that they're gaining, because they're not able to spend it. That would be impossible for them to do that. What they're gaining is absolute power. They are both power-mad individuals beyond anything you could ever understand. Here is a man who was president for 8 years. She was running the country probably for a good portion of those years while he was diddling people in the back room. So she's already been the president. You want them again? You want another 8 years of this stink coming out of Washington? So you say, well, you know, I would vote if there was a middle-of-the-road Republican. No, you wouldn't. You're lying to yourself. No, you wouldn't. Many of you are such dyed-in-the-wool children of communists, socialists, leftists, that you could never, ever vote for a Republican, even in secret, because you'd feel that you're betraying your heritage. That's as clear as I can ever see it. You're brainwashed. You're locked. You're locked on the ice. You're trapped. You're trapped. You can never break out of the prison you were put in by your parents and their milieu or their social circle. So you say, well, he's not the best candidate because why? What has he done? Who has he killed? Did he leave people in Benghazi? Did he leave people in Benghazi and tell the military not to save them? Donald Trump did not do that. Donald Trump did not steal your money and run the debt to $20 trillion. Donald Trump did not raise your taxes. Donald Trump did not quadruple the price of food. Donald Trump is not stirring a race war. Donald Trump did not leave U.S. personnel in Benghazi to be slaughtered and desecrated by filthy Muslims. Trump did not send the U.S. Navy to fight for Syria and Al-Qaeda. Trump did not arm ISIS and systematically exterminate Christians throughout the Middle East. Trump did not betray Israel. Trump did not provide financing and technology to Iran's nuclear weapons program. Trump did not give our military secrets to China. Would you like a little bit more about what Trump did not do? And what Barack Obama and the corrupt Democrat establishment did do? You'll have it when I come back on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Everyone's upset over Trump's flip-flop on immigration, but I got to tell you, you can't deport 40 million people, but you can deport the one-third of prisoners who are illegal aliens. And BJ on ABC has a good point. We don't have time for him. He said, yes, start deporting the H-1B visa holders. I agree 100%. There's going to be no civil war if you go and deport the H-1B visa holders. Get rid of them. They were brought in by the greed bags like Zuckerberg, Bill Gates, and everyone else in the tech industry who do not want to pay a fair wage to American tech workers. They did it strictly to lower the wages of American tech workers. So you begin by eliminating the H-1B visa. It's been abused from the day it was created, and you deport them. They're not going to fight. They're not going to shoot. There's going to be no civil war. There's not millions of them. There's probably hundreds of thousands of H-1B workers. And by the way, if you tell them that they have 90 days to leave, most of them would leave on their own because they are usually from India. They're peace-loving people. They're not going to fight. They're not going to shoot. These are not violent people. They don't have tattoos on their necks. Okay, so start there. I mean, you start somewhere. You don't have to start with all or nothing. You start with the prisoners. Clean out the jails, the prisons. Again, you self-deport the H-1Bs by eliminating the H-1B visa program entirely. So Zuckerberg, instead of having $57 billion, Zuckerberg has $52 billion. Instead of Bill Gates having 5 million sweaters, he has 4 million sweaters, okay? These people don't know limits to their greed. It's a machine that's out of control. The avarice has never been seen like this. Look at the Clintons. Avarice, 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 avarice.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
Hour three, restored, just a day off looking at paintings, drinking beer, eating a corned beef sandwich alone in a booth with a beer. I mean, it's nice going at night, having a dinner with a couple of friends, again, sending the food back. I won't even go into it. I order a fish dinner. It comes out pink. I waited 40 minutes. All I wanted was a fish sandwich yesterday after a hold. I invited my friends to dinner. They finished their dinner. I had to send the sandwich back because they gave me pink fish. So I said, I don't eat raw fish. It took 40 more minutes to get it back to punish me. I had to grab the waiter's wrist again and make him leave the French fries. The minute you say, I don't, you know, take it back and recook it, they try to take the whole plate away from you. You're famished. I grab the wrist and I say, get a plate for the blah, 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 and leave the vegetable. My friends finished dinner and I didn't get my sandwich back. I don't eat pinworm tuna. Thank you. So here I am, totally refreshed. I'm refreshed today. Teddy, I just got news on Teddy. You want to hear anything about Teddy? He was in the doctor again today? Raise your hand if you want to hear about Teddy. Don't call. Everyone wants to hear about Teddy, the mascot of the Savage Nation, the most lovely dog. I mean, I've had dogs. Love him. Everyone loves their dog. So, you know, Teddy's had his issues. He's getting a little older, the dental, the anesthesia, the cardiogram. That was trauma number one. Then this happened. So, we sent him to a vet who specializes in chiropractic. Would you believe this? And I just got a report that she adjusted the neck and she adjusted his lower back before he even knew she did it. She's like a genius. And he's much better, which is incredible. I don't let him jump off the bed. I put a cushion under it. So it's the jumping. I know what did it. The whole year of jumping. So it happens to you, too, from jumping. Let's say you were a paratrooper in Vietnam. You can't jump anymore. But things happen when you get older. It's not a joke. And let's say you're a great basketball player and you live in Oakland, California when you were 20. And now you're 60. You can't jump anymore. The minute you jump, your neck hurts. It's the same with a dog. All right, so today we're talking about... No, it's funny. I was in an airport about a month ago. I'm not a tall guy. There was a guy in the bathroom, must have been 6'8", black guy. So what are you going to do? You're standing next to a stall. He got off a plane. I got off a plane. It was a little private jet port. And it's a little more, let's say, collegial because you're both sort of in your own little worlds. He came off a plane with some friends. I don't know where they were. I said, where are you flying from today? Where were you? He said, well, I went to the National Football Hall of Fame today. He was a very famous African-American football. I mean, this guy was so big. It was overwhelmingly big. Nicest guy in the world. And I told him, he doesn't know me. I didn't say I have. I said, well, you know, it's an interesting thing, the Hall of Fame. I said, I won the National Radio Hall of Fame Award. I said, it's a big deal to me. And you know what he said? He said, yes, it is a big deal to be respected by your peers. In different field, but understood what an honor really is. Now, having said that and told you the Teddy as well, now we'll get into the meat of the show, which is, again, the issue of immigration. Again, it's very easy to act like a radio tough guy, get up here and start and scream, throw them all out, get them out of here. It makes you feel good, doesn't it, say throw them all out, get rid of them, throw them all out of the country? Well, who's all? What do you mean by all? Well, okay, let's come to a compromise. Get rid of all the illegal aliens who are in prison. That's one-third of the prison population, according to federal statistics. 28 to 32% of prisoners are there because they committed multiple felonies. So that's one-third of the prison population. Deport them. They are already incarcerated, so they're very easy to deport. Not hard to do. That's a lot different than going door-to-door, isn't it? So you don't have to be an extremist and say all. You can say some. Then, number two, cut off all welfare and all public benefits forever. That will limit the number of people coming in for the sugar and also encourage many of the families to leave the country because the land of milk and honey is over. Okay, there's no milk and there's no honey. So the honey can't stay home and knock out children and watch television. Okay, so honey will go back where she came from. That's number two. You don't have to do anything. You cut off the bennies. Number three, you cut off the H-1B visas. Immediately you eliminate them, Mr. Trump. And you deport all H-1B visa holders, not in a violent manner. You just tell them, we're eliminating the H-1B visa retroactively 5 years, period. Most of them will go home. They'll go back to India, and they will help build their nation. And they will earn less money there than they do here. That is true. But it will open up jobs at Zuckerberg's enterprise for American IT workers who were thrown out. Let's say they're making $80 an hour. I don't know what they're making, IT workers. I'm guess $50 to $80 an hour. You know what they're paying the illegals that he's bringing in on the H-1Bs from India? $30 to $40. So it's a simple matter. His avarice is out of control. That's how it's working. That's what the H-1Bs are for. So those are some of the things you can actually do. Now, people saying, oh, you're a traitor. You've gone back on your stance. How dare you? I'll never listen to you again. I will not buy scorched earth. Well, wait a minute. Hold on. I'm not going back on anything I said, and I'll prove it to you. I have only one thing in radio, as does everyone else in this business. You know what that word is? I learned it the first day I started in the radio. Credibility, credibility, credibility. If you lose your credibility, you're going to lose everything you worked for your whole life. That's true in talk radio. It's true in television. That's why people like Jake Tapper have no credibility. They have no audience. That's why guys like George Stephanopoulos has no credibility, has no audience, none whatsoever. I mean, it comes with the network, but he himself has no followers. They know he's nothing but a mouthpiece for the Democrats. So I will show you right now. I'm going to prove it to you. Now, remember this date. It's the 25th of August, 2016, on the Savage Nation. We got together a flashback from November 13th, 2015, on what I said about deporting illegal aliens. Tell me if what I said then differs from what I said today in light of what Trump said yesterday in clip number 11. I ask myself, how did this happen? What are the children of America going to inherit when you have a lunatic like this in the White House opening the floodgates, flooding America with the third world? I don't mind the third world if you bring in people from the third world who can contribute to the country. But you bring in deadbeats, you bring in criminals, you bring in terrorists amongst them. And only one man is talking about it like that, and that's Donald Trump. So we all cheered Donald Trump, didn't we? When he said he would close the floodgates, and he would not admit the flotsam and jetsam of the world. He'd be very selective. We even cheered him when he said he would deport the illegals, which I don't agree with, by the way. I'll go on record again. I do not agree with him. It's never going to happen. It's simply for the campaign trail. He could have said what I say in Government Zero in one of my 40 points to save America, which is deport the illegal aliens who are in prison. One-third of the prison population, about 28-30%, are illegal aliens. Deport them. Start the buses running that way with them. Don't start with the families. Because if you start with the criminals, you'll see a giant sucking sound going south because many of their families are here, even though they're here. Donald Trump could have said that. I disagree with him on that. But we cheered him when he said he would deport illegal aliens because no one else dares even say what he would do to stop the flood. In fact, if you look at the Republican candidates, they're all in favor of open borders.
Savage.
Okay. Have I changed? Sorry, I didn't. So I said that November 13, 2015. Don't call me a flip-flopper. Don't call me a traitor. Don't call me what I'm not, for God's sakes. One thing is I'm a realist, and I'm also pretty consistent in my realism. And that point is in 40 points to save the country. And I said the same thing today. And I write all about it in Scorched Earth in a completely different way, which I read to you in the last hour. I'm not going to read it to you again. So as time goes on, we will see how our ignorance of history leads us to make false assumptions and come to false conclusions. And I know what I wanted to do. I'll do it right now. I said, what is a 21st century conservative is something I was going to do in this hour. Yeah. Okay, I'll read that a little bit. Page 167 to show you why you need to buy the book, because no one else has ever written this. This is not a derivative book. Those of you who are artists understand what it means to say it's derivative. It's a derisive term for a piece of art. You know that, right? You say, oh, that painting is derivative. That was a way of putting someone down and saying there's nothing original about it. My book is not a derivative book. It's an original book. And that's why I called it a masterpiece a week ago. And a psychologist, so-called, took umbrage at my calling my own book a masterpiece. Who's going to call it a masterpiece? You? I'm going to wait for a reviewer from the New Yorker to call it a masterpiece? They're not going to do it. They've already castigated me and put me into a category in which I don't belong. So I have to, you know, if I'm not for myself, who will be? If I'm only for myself, who am I? So here's what I write. See if it's derivative. For starters, we need to stop talking about the beloved war horses such as Edmund Burke and William F. Buckley Jr. The old English statesman and the recent TV provocateur are dead and buried. They were conservatives in their time. The world has changed. The definition of what a conservative is has changed. With the emergence of ISIS, we have to redefine our terms to include challenges they never dreamed of. Liberals do not seem to understand that they cannot be as liberal as they once were, given the threat from the Islamofascist savages. The left has gone even more to the left, almost to the point of suffering from Stockholm Syndrome. Conservatives have to decide how they're going to adapt as well. Political movements like Species must adapt or die. You did not read that anywhere, because it's not been written anywhere. I didn't lift it from anyone. I wrote it. There are those who think that they know what conservatism is and will tolerate only those who accept their definition. These so-called pundits believe they can apply a simple litmus test to determine who is allowed to call themselves conservative and who is not. Anyone who doesn't subscribe to each and every item on their list. Ban abortions, promote the Christian religion and values, build the military, shrink taxes, fails the test. They say so-and-so is not a true conservative. They whine in squeaky nasal voices. I have my own definition. When I began on radio in 1994, I was asked to define what I stood for. People asked, what do you mean by conservative? They didn't really understand it that well. I didn't have to quote Buckley or Burke. Unlike some people, I didn't need to go to a textbook to tell anyone what I believed in. I am thinking constantly. I listen to people who call the Savage Nation. I talk to people in restaurants and on the street. I write books. It will come as no surprise to any of you that I define conservatism as borders, language, and culture. Tens of millions of libertarians agree with me. They say they believe in these three principles, but they just don't want anyone telling them how to live. I do not know a better definition today of what conservatism is than mine. Just as left-wing pedantic academics, putzfessers such as Barry Obama are running the country into the ground while they hold offices in the executive branch, right-wing pedantic academics are sapping our ability to fight back. Ironically, I understand the historical conservatives like Burke and Buckley better than they do. Like all academics, they can squeak out isolated historical details in their thin little voices, but they miss the forest for the trees. The conservative forest has always been borders, language, and culture. Edmund Burke did not face the same challenges we do today. Burke was a legislator in the British Parliament in the 18th century when the British Empire was expanding. He supported the empire but was critical of the king or his ministers whenever they destroyed local cultures and customs. He understood, as I do today, that the essence of conservatism is borders, language, and culture. That's page 169, Scorched Earth. Let me finish one more page. That's why Burke opposed the East India Tea Company's actions during the First Anglo-Maratha War. The British had facilitated the destruction of not only the infrastructure of an entire region of India, but of long-standing customs that were essential to the social and economic stability of the region as well. Burke understood that destroying the local pillars of civilization as it existed in India at the time would not benefit the British Empire. Did avowed conservatives such as George W. Bush and Dick Cheney understand that when they dismantled Iraq and left the pieces to be consumed by the ISIS dogs? Burke's support of the American Revolution was based on the same principles. He supported the empire's rule over the American colonies. but he opposed the same thing the American colonists opposed in 1775. Parliament destroying long-standing legal customs by imposing new taxes and laws when the colonies had previously reserved that authority for themselves. Eliminating those cherished legal traditions was an attack on American culture at the time, just as the progressives' attack on private property and free enterprise is an assault today. That's from Scorched Earth, not derivative, original, for you, my dear reader, my dear listeners of the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. So Donald Trump is in trouble. Everybody seems to believe that right now. I'm not sure I believe it. I think that her criminality and her avarice is so overwhelming and the stink is so high and reached such a critical mass that many in the middle will vote for Trump. I wouldn't give up so fast. However, because he has flip-flopped on immigration just yesterday, many of you saying, aha, I knew it, I'm not voting for him. But let me say this. You'll do what you want anyway. I believe that conservatives, as I write in Scorched Earth on page 171, expand your inclusiveness by shrinking your definitions. Let Donald Trump or any other self-described conservative politician stand shoulder to shoulder with three simple words, borders, language, and culture. He still is going to build the wall. That's what I heard. Okay, he's going to support all of the other elements so far as I know. The important thing for you to know is this. We need a new definition today to defend ourselves against the progressive Islamist takeover we face today. It is not 1985. It's not 1995. William F. Buckley Jr. was in his mid-70s on September 11, 2001, and he died in 2008. He lived long enough to realize that the Iraq War was a tragic mistake, as I did at the time. But he didn't live to see what it and Hillary Clinton's support of the Arab Spring produced. ISIS, and the all-out invasion of the West by Muslim refugees and terrorists. And just as the means of defending America's borders, language, and culture were different for Buckley during the Cold War than they were for Burke during America's colonial period, our means must be different in defending them against the progressive Islamist takeover we face today. That's my philosophy as described in my book, Scorched Earth. Simple words, borders, language, and culture. It's a must-have in your library to give to a prog or someone in the middle who doesn't quite understand that the smears against Trump by Blumenthal, who was the Beria of our time. Look him up. Look up Beria. Sidney Blumenthal, Hillary Clinton's hitman and all-around propagandist, is the Beria of our time. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-728. Savage.
Matter of who you fear most, that's what it comes down to. So if you're a middle-class person in America, you fear the corrupt Clinton hit machine. You fear Blumenthal, who I would say could be compared to Beria in the Soviet Union in his absolute madness and quest for power. Or you could say he could be not the Himmler of the Stalinist era, but let's say someone involved in the smear campaigns and such that Blumenthal is well known for. So now he's smearing Trump as someone who supports the KKK. This is the work. You can see the fingerprints, the greasy fingerprints of Sidney Blumenthal are all over the smear campaign against Trump, saying he's the Ku Klux Klan or this or that. The smear campaign that's coming out of the Clinton machine, tying him to the KKK white supremacists, has the fingerprints, in my opinion, of Blumenthal all over them, it or whatever you want to call it. And that's why I compared him to Lavrenty Pavlovich Beria, who's not well known in American political discussions at all, but he was so evil. It was frightening. And you know, just read about him. You can Google him or Wikipedia him, whatever. You'll learn a little bit about him here. And you'll see what could happen under a Clinton government. You say, are you crazy? He's not going to take people in and have them killed. He's not going to rape women over and over again like Beria did. He wouldn't do a thing like that. I mean, Beria was a sexual predator. Once he had absolute power, he was found to have raped large numbers of young women who were picked off the streets of Moscow or in Russia by his bodyguards and brought to his mansion, as well as of using threats and intimidation to get sexual favors from the wiser Soviet officials. That'll never happen here. We don't have that kind of thing here. But he would tell women, he would drive around in the streets on warm nights during the war years. This guy Beria, in the armored Packard limousine, point out young women to be detained and escorted to his mansion where wine and a feast awaited them. And after dining, Beria would take the women into a soundproofed office and rape them. Beria's bodyguards later reported that their orders included handing each victim a flower bouquet as she left his house, which meant that once she accepted the bouquet, it was consensual. Refusal meant arrest. And he would also bring women in and exchange sexual advances for the promise of freeing their relatives from the gulag. It's awful. It's just horrible to read this kind of thing. And so you're saying, well, what does it have to do with Hillary Clinton? Well, I don't know. The rape thing, the sexual predator thing, there's sort of a little something there, right? And then we have that for 8 years, a kind of thing like that? That was dismissed by, oh, go on, it's just the shenanigans. Can you imagine feminists dismissing allegations of rape from a sitting president? Can you imagine that, having this filth back in the White House? The wolf man back in the White House? Can you imagine this while Catheter is in the other room tending to her medical needs? I don't know. I mean, geez. And you keep saying, well, Trump's worse. What do you mean he's worse? What has he done? Did Trump create the refugee crisis in Europe? Did Trump abandon the embassy in Libya and have people actually die? Of course not. This is what propaganda is that you start to believe the big lie. So Blumenthal knows that if you tell a big lie often enough, it becomes the truth. So you keep saying racist, 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 racist. You keep saying homophobe, 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 and the fools believe you. You say, oh yeah, well, he's a homophobe. Well, he's a well-known homophobe. Well, he's never said anything against gays, never. He's not a racist at all. He's an American nationalist. Does that make you a racist? You're on the minds of the illegitimate left. Anyone who doesn't support open borders and doesn't support destroying their own nation and giving it away for nothing is apparently a racist to them. So that's what we're facing right now. Eventually, they all fall. Eventually, even this crazy man, Beria, who had absolute power. After his boss, Stalin, died in 1953, he was so drunk on his own power and his overconfidence in his power after Stalin's death permitted him to misjudge other members of the Russian Politburo. And what happened? Remember the name Khrushchev? Remember that funny man with the shoe who banged it on the desk saying, we will bury you? Well, Khrushchev led a coup d'etat along with the military, along with the great, great Russian General Marshal Georgi Zhukov. They arrested this madman who had absolute power, Beria. He was arrested on charges of treason. He was then condemned by the entire Politburo. And guess what happened? He was taken to the basement of the Lubyanka prison and shot by General Pavel Batitsky. Interestingly enough, I don't know if you know, I had a grandmother arrested when she was in Russia. She served time in the Lubyanka prison for some of her agitations. I don't know if you know that. She was a wild woman. I hardly understood her because I didn't speak Russian. And she didn't speak very much. She sat like an American Indian. She died when I was very young. But we lived all in one little apartment. And it was the Lubyanka prison where she lived. I didn't know that. But anyway, the point is, I just saw the word Lubyanka prison and the person in the Manchurian Candidate, something triggered in my mind to talk about it for a minute. So Beria ran the NKVD, which was the equivalent of the secret police under Stalin in the Communist Party of the Soviet Union. And the reason I got into this discussion of Beria, which should be discussed more often in talk radio and amongst the intelligentsia of the right, is because people like Beria exist inside the Hillary machine. They're well known. They're known in the camp. They're well known in the Hillary camp. These are evil people. They're like the first deputy chairman of the Council of Ministers of the Hillary Soviet Union. Be very careful what you're voting in here. these are real villains, as opposed to the smear job on poor old Donald Trump. I mean, you got to feel bad for him. If they can do that to a billionaire, can you imagine what they could do to you if they want to get you? Think about what I just said to you. If they could smear a billionaire like Donald Trump, let's say he's not worth $10 billion. Let's say it's $2 billion. I don't care what it is. He's a billionaire, right? If they can effectively control the puppets like Anderson Cooper, Wolfie the Blinky Blitzer, Jake the Woodpecker Tapper Head, if they can control them and keep smearing Trump with the lies, they don't actually say it themselves, of course. The woodpeckers and the pandas of the media, they get Hispanics, for example, who jump up with signs calling him racist, and they make believe they didn't do it, but that's how they do it. It's called agitprop. If they can smear a billionaire, what can they do to you as an ordinary citizen if they want to destroy you? Is that the kind of world you want to live in? Well, get ready for it, because if you elect her, that's what you're going to have. If you elect Trump, in my opinion, we're never going to have that kind of smear campaign. Never. He's going to be too busy trying to save America to bother smearing the American left, unfortunately, because they're worthy of smearing. Simply by exposing them, you smear them. I think I made my point, and I want to repeat it again in case you think I've changed, because I haven't. I played the tape from November 2015 where I said deporting 40 million people is unrealistic. It's never going to happen. I said start by deporting the prisoners. That's one-third of the prison population. And today we added something new to it as a result of the organic nature of this program when a caller suggested that we deport all the H-1B visa holders because, first of all, most H-1B visa holders, all of them, in fact, are not violent people. They're not members of gangs. They came here simply for the wages, and that was, of course, so that greed, avaricious individuals like Mark Zuckerberg, in my opinion, can make more billions. Instead of being worth $57 billion, he'd be worth $50 billion if he paid a fair wage to American IT workers. So you get rid of the H-1B visa, you make it retroactive 5 years, and you deport them. And once you tell them that, you tell them they have 90 days to leave, and they'll leave. They're not going to fight you. They're not going to go get an AK-47 and scream Allah Akbar or get a Hindu goddess to beat you with when you come to the door. They're not going to beat you with a seven-handed Hindu goddess. They're going to leave because they're nice people. So there are ways to straighten things out without being violent or crazy about it. But to come up with the idea, oh, yeah, he's not a purist, I'm not going to deport them all. You'll hear radio tough guys say, throw them all out. Get them all out. I can do it. Well, good. You and Beria can do it. Get the leather jacket and the leather pants. You and Beria can stand up and throw 40 million people out of the country. You and Beria can root them out. You know, you ought to play the Horst Wessel song behind yourself when you come up with stuff like that. Deport them all. Just stupid. Idiotic. That's all Trump was saying. He's being a realist. So I know you don't want to hear it because it's satisfying emotionally to say throw them all out. But I said to you earlier, who is going to cook your food? You? Oh, you're going to be a line cook now. Who is going to work in the factories across America? You? Yeah, there are still factories. Oh, yeah. I know many of you PJ media people don't know there are real factories. There are factories out there. Those of us who sit with the keypads who never leave the house and actually see factories. I do. I know what factories. I worked in them. Yeah, I actually did. I worked in an ice cream factory. It's not hyperbole. I hated it. I hated the work like you can't believe. It was the most monotonous, horrible work of my life. I was like that character in The Sopranos. I'll never forget it. The fat guy when he goes on the lam, who's gay, the gay one that has to run out of New York. And he's living in New Hampshire and he's got to make a living. He can't ply his trade as a gangster. So he takes a job as a handyman on someone's house up there in New Hampshire. So it shows him sawing and cutting, and he can't take it. He can't believe it. Here's a guy who was a wise guy making a good living as a gangster, and now he has to actually saw wood and nail. He's helping a woman build a barn. So it shows him. I forget the character. He's a wonderful actor. It shows him. He's cutting wood, and it's in the morning, and he says to himself, wow, must be. He doesn't look at the clock. He's trying to make the day go by because the work is so horrible. So he says to himself, look at the sun. The sun is, it must be 11 o'clock. And he pushes the saw a little bit more. 11 must be 11:30, must be lunchtime soon. He saws a little bit more. And then he looks down at his wristwatch, it's 9:30. He's like, I can't believe it. You don't know what time is like when you hate what you're doing. So he throws the hammer down. He leaves. The next thing, he just says, the heck with it. He'd rather risk his life and go back to New York or New Jersey than put up with that hell of working like that up there in New Hampshire. So he's on the lam. Of course, he kills a poor guy over an auto accident. He hits someone from behind on a country road. And this poor schnook says to him, "Oh no, no, let's go call the cops and settle this." So the mafia character says to him, "Look." He says, "Look, can't we just settle this? I'll give you $300." It's a little fender bender. No. You know, the straight guy from New Hampshire. No. You'll come in now and we'll call the insurance companies and we'll call the police. He says, "No, look, I'll give you $700. No. We'll just take care of it the legitimate way." So you say, okay. So the guy starts walking to his country house and the fat criminal shoots him in the back of the head. That was a horrible scene. There's a lot to be learned from that, by the way, which is that if you get into a fender bender with a bad person and they're willing to straighten it out for cash, I say go for the cash. That's all. So anyway, the point I'm making is I worked in a factory. I never lose the thread of a thought. It's how I test my memory. That's how you test your memories. You start telling a very long story and see if you can follow the initial thread that you started in the tapestry. If you can, you find out you don't need to go to a neurologist. So to go back to the original thread of this tapestry, I did work in a factory. I worked in an ice cream factory. It was horrible. And by 10 in the morning, I was dying to sleep. And in fact, my friend's father owned the factory, which is why we were able to sleep while the other workers couldn't. And so I remember coming in the back warehouse of the room, and my friend, who was a great guy, this guy was afraid of nothing. He went on in life. I forgot what he did. He was sleeping on a box of frozen ice cream in the back. Cartons of frozen ice. I don't know how he didn't freeze to death. He had blankets there. The owner's son was sleeping, too. He didn't work too hard. See, the fish rots from the head down. The owner's son was in the well. The owner's son was sleeping on the boxes. My friend was sleeping on the boxes. I was the only schmuck who was actually working on the production line, putting ice cream in boxes till my hands turned blue. What I'm saying is factory work is horrible. Nobody really wants to do it, but if you do it, you do it to make a living. You're going to do it now? All of you members of the PJ Media out there, you're going to put down your keypad and you're going to work in a factory because you're a true American. You're a real conservative. You're Edmund Burke. Your grandfather wrote the Constitution. I get it. I understand. So be realistic about this. The factories come to a halt. The food you love to eat is no longer cooked or served. So start easy. You deport the prisoners who are illegal aliens. That's an easy one. They're incarcerated. You then cut off the H-1B visa going back 5 years, and you tell folks who are in here on H-1Bs they have 90 days to leave, and that's it. That's a good start, and that's a compromise. See, if Trump had been on my show and I was running a town hall, I would have said that. Instead, okay, went to a guy who can't think on his feet. They didn't know what to say. They stumble around like Mutt and Jeff. They didn't have an answer to the question. I, being an intellectual giant, have given you an answer, and it's all found. And by the way, this book, Scorched Earth, the publisher told me it cost a fortune to put raised letters which look like flames are on fire. He said, "We spent a fortune," she said, this morning. I didn't realize it. When you put embossed lettering on a cover that look like the letters are on fire, she said, "We spent a fortune on it because you're worth it." I didn't know that. I'll be back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Well, the hour is almost coming to an end. I'm full of energy. You know, I need a day off once in a while. I know people get mad at me. I take a day off. And they say, "Oh, how dare you take a day off?" I mean, what am I, an animal? A computer? I'm not a computer. I'm a human being. I have a certain number of days that my contract permits me to take time off. So in the middle of the summer, I can't take a day here and a day there. They get angry at you. They think you should be on 8 days a week. Well, I can't be on 8 days a week. I'm taking a day here and there, and I hope you understand I'm a human. I'm entitled to a day off. First of all, I come back stronger. And let me remind you something else. When I first began in radio, I had another profession. I couldn't leave it. I signed a contract which insisted that I was able to take off 1 week every 6 weeks. Did you know that my first year on KSFO? I took off 1 week every sixth week in order to do other work. I couldn't leave the other job. And my ratings were very high anyway. People waited for me to come back. So, well, you look at television shows, for example, like Ray Donovan, any popular show. They're on like for one season. They're only on once a week. And you wait for the next season. They're so good. So I can't worry about every person out in the world says, "Oh, you did this. You said that." You got to look at the overall body of work and then whether people like you or not. or they're relating to you. That's the way you got to do radio. You can't worry about the individual cranks out there who are going to say that they don't like you because you did this. I mean, they want you to be something no one could be. That's all. So here we are. It's the end of another great broadcast day on the Savage Nation. I'm almost sorry I have to leave. I think I'll stay on another 7 hours. I'll do a Fidel Castro. I'll be on till midnight tonight. Not. It's the Savage Nation. Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. Be here or be in the darkness of nowhere.